The fans chanting KD sucks. People got such a fucking hemorrhoid over it. Like, they just didn't get it. Like, and there's nothing to get. It's just funny. First time, long time, coming right at you. I'm Smitty. We got Roan, producers Booze, John Kelly in the booth. And ladies and gentlemen, the Philadelphia 76ers, first place in the Eastern Conference after putting on an absolute seven-put, barely not covering whooping on the Brooklyn Nets, who only had Kyrie Irving out there some way, somehow. But gentlemen, it's exactly what they needed. They got it done. And right now there's, what, 17 games left, 19 games left or something going into the playoffs? We got the first seed locked up. Roan, what are you thinking?
I believe in this team, and I don't want to be doom and gloom, but Kyrie Irving is good, dude. Irving is really good. He's incredible. And, like, your only hope for beating the Nets is that they have too much talent and only one basketball, because there's so many good players on that team. Like, if you add Durant and Harden to that team from last night, or even just Durant, they're – the Sixers probably lose that game.
I don't know if they lose that game every night that they play. The one thing about the Nets, when all three of them are out there thus far, Harden is the point guy for whatever reason. The game goes through him. Durant, like, isn't taking the biggest shots out there. And if Harden is that guy and everything goes through him for the playoffs, that's what we want, because Harden has choked thus far in the playoffs. And just like you said, hopefully there is not enough basketball to go around and they absolutely blow the chunks all over themselves. But I mean, you can't stop Embiid. LaMarcus Aldridge announced his retirement. Great career. I think he's a Hall of Famer. Blake Griffin's nothing. Like, DeAndre Jordan, okay, he had 11 rebounds in the first quarter, but I mean, you're not going to be able to stop Embiid. You're not. And the best thing about them winning last night and kind of solidifying themselves, hopefully, for the first seed in the conference is what I've been stating all along. You don't want that second or third seed because you don't want to play the Nets or Bucks in the second round, because they're just going to beat the shit out of each other. We want to coast to the Eastern Conference Finals and then take the survivor from that series and go all the way to the fucking finals.
I think the player who's most important for the Sixers right now, it's not Embiid, it's not Ben Simmons, it's Tobias Harris. We need Tobias Harris to be buzzing at that exact right frequency, about 25 points a night, a threat every single time. He can be the most underrated player when he's at his best. People will forget about him because they're worried about the media talking about Ben Simmons, whatever he is, and Embiid obviously having an incredible season. But if Tobias Harris can carry us in games when maybe Ben Simmons doesn't have the offensive spark, maybe just as an ancillary thing to go with Joel Embiid, that's what we need. As far as the Nets, I 100% agree with you that out of the three of them, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and James Harden is the one that scares me the least out of those three. Not that he's not an incredible player, but in the playoffs, I don't see him taking over in the way that I could see those other two taking over. The other two really scare me. Harden, I can live with.
He's also a defensive liability.
Big time. And, you know, I mean, and our defense is incredible. Like, let's not forget that Ben Simmons should win the defensive player of the year. It's going to come down to him and Gobert. Whoever basically has the best media campaign is going to win it. But at the same time, I think that Matisse Thybulle is going to be probably like a second team all defense type of guy. He's respected around the league in a way that not a lot of other people are, for only their defensive skill set so early in their career.
And that's exactly why you didn't want to give up Thybulle in a trade for a Kyle Lowry or Victor Oladipo, whatever the fuck his name is. You keep Thybulle, you keep the core, you keep the D. And to be honest with you, and you said the most important player being Tobias Harris, I thought you were going Furkan there, because I'll be honest, Furkan, kind of turning the corner on him. I'm a Furkan fan. Call me Turkish. Give me life. He is playing very, very well right now, because all he needs to worry about is shooting, and that's what he's doing. He's finally hitting the shots. But let's not forget, George Hill taking some nice shoot around shots yesterday, should be back very soon. I think he will be a very, very nice catalyst to add to this team come the playoffs.
Will we see him before the season's end, or are we just going to save him for the playoffs?
They were saying as soon as next week, I read, but also I wouldn't mind, you know, making sure he's 100%. Watching his shoot around, I mean, granted, he was just shooting. He wasn't doing anything else. He was knocking down threes like no problem, pocket corner. So,
Ron, do you worry about inserting him just in the playoffs with very little, you know, fit or practice?
Well, that's why I kind of want to get him back as soon as possible.
You're right.
If healthy.
Yeah, let's like see what the chemistry is, because it's not a guarantee. We added Alec Burks last year, and it's like that dude didn't work at all. There was no seamless integration, and frankly, it seemed like he didn't want to be here. I'm really looking at George Hill as a bonus. He's out of my mind. He's out of sight, out of mind right now. I'm not counting on him to do anything, but honestly, like, if we're going to go far, knock on wood, if we're going to win a championship, George Hill is realistically going to have a big impact and a big part of it. But I mean, I'm not focusing on it. I'm trying to focus on this team bringing their synergy to the place it needs to be. And I'm focused on Embiid finishing out this run and winning the MVP. Like, let's just sprinkle in some 40s. If he has one 50-point game, one more marquee performance, he can put himself in a good spot. But he has to keep on pushing, and I think he knows that.
And he's going to want to be out there. And I think Doc Rivers wants him to be out there as well. But, again, when it comes down to it, say you clinched the East – Embiid is going for that MVP title, and they're blowing somebody out in the second half or whatever. Do you want to keep him out there? Because I don't know if I want to. I don't know if this is like, you remember that one time where Shaq was going for the scoring title and they just gave him the ball every fucking time and he scored like 70? Like, I don't know if I trust Embiid out there just essentially trying to win an MVP and not like hurting himself.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not like they're mutually exclusive, but the thing that I would rather have is like a long playoff run / championship. Yeah. Again, I'm knocking on wood over here, no jinxes over here, but at the same time, like, the MVP is window dressing. If you can bring a title home, you'll have a statue, and that's a little bit better than an MVP.
Here's a little something I heard in the streets. Riddle me this, Roan. Is Joel Embiid right now a better player than Allen Iverson? Two different positions.
No.
But is he a better player than Allen Iverson? I think
he's far more dominant.
I think it's too early to tell.
I mean, we're getting way down in the Philly sports radio cackles of hell with this one.
It's still way too early.
There's no right answer, but they're all wrong answers.
How many years was Allen Iverson a Sixer? Like, he spent most of his career in Philadelphia, most of his dominant years in Philadelphia. We're only on year, what, 5, 6 of Joel Embiid? Like,
I'll tell you what, Allen Iverson's MVP year, yes, he was dominant. Yes, he was the reason for that Eastern Conference championship. Without him, they're a 500 team. Joel Embiid dominates the game like I've never seen. And he's not even coming close, hopefully, to what he possibly can do. He doesn't attack the rim as much as he possibly could. Imagine him being like half Hakeem the Dream and half Shaq, because he really could be that guy.
Allen Iverson is one of the most influential NBA players all time. Culturally, the way that he played the game, the way that he looked, the way that he carried himself, every single thing about him was culturally relevant and it played in. But even with all that, I honestly think you have to say that Embiid is the better player. Like, wow. Allen Iverson, the things that were against him, that were held against him, he had like a low shooting percentage. Like, he didn't play like some of these traditional point guard, like, he wasn't that. He was a 30-point scorer, but he might do it on like 39 or like 41% shooting. Embiid, the way that he's added his shot this year, last year, any other year, he's not better than Iverson. But the Embiid we're seeing this year, I genuinely think, and I'm not saying this to be like clickbaity or like controversial, I think it's like one of the best basketball performances of my lifetime that I've been able to watch. I don't know about like Dr. J, Wilt, Moses Malone, any of those dudes, but I think that the Embiid that we're watching this year is transcendent. The fact that he's added his shot, the fact that he is playing so within himself, he's not doing the herky jerky, like pump fake three from the top of the key every single time. Mm-hmm. He's perfected his game and taken it to a point where it's like, if you have to put a gun to my head and pick one of the two of them, I'm saying it's Embiid.
Yeah, and he hit two or three threes in the first quarter last game. He can really do it all. And I think part of it has to do with there not being that many dominant centers out there who can stop him. I mean, if he's playing in the same realm as Shaq, as David Robinson, he's probably not going to put out that dominant performance every single night. But right now, I mean, the run and gun, three-point kiss my balls league that we're running in, like, who's going to stop them? There's nobody. It's a cyclical kind of thing that we got going on where everybody's just running and doing 3 points. And that's all you care about. And then Embiid comes in and just stamps it down like nobody else.
Pound for pound, you got to go Iverson. He did the most what he could with his body, with the tools, but it's not pound for pound. It's like, that's not what we're talking about. And Embiid is that good. I still love Iverson. Embiid will never be close to the cultural relevance of Allen Iverson. But, I mean, that I think that there's some – like, if he brings a championship to Philadelphia, which is still on the table, and it's not for Allen Iverson, he will be a god, Smitty.
I think he's as close to a god as you could possibly be in Philadelphia. Really. Like, yeah, physically, no, for sure. Spiritually, emotionally. Like, he kind of is a god out there.
Oh, big time, dude. He honestly is. It's incredible. It's incredible to watch. Smitty, and just to divert for a second, but you know what else has been incredible? Watching your Rappaport, every single one of those videos is so fucking good and so fucking funny. Just a kudos and a tip of the hat to you, my friend, because that is just like, you've been sitting on that footage, it's been in the incubator, just, you know how ridiculous and funny that whole situation was.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm going to have to send him like a fruit basket or something and thank him for like all this content and material. And it's not even like all out there yet. We're cutting down like my deposition, which was 7 hours, to like 20 minutes. And it's absurd. The entire thing's absurd. Like, I talk to people and it's honestly like,
the fact that these things are being said in a court of law in the United States is just unbelievable.
Well, that's part of the thing. Like, the first clip, I was just watching over it just to see if there was anything like special to put out there, and give credit to my wife, who was like listening in the background, the first clip that I threw out there, the herpes, medical fact or whatever. Like, I'm just listening through it and she's like, what did you just say there? I was like, oh, it's like medical science. Like, unfortunately, it's a fact. And I'm like, what, you think that's funny? She's like, it's weird. And I start thinking, like, I wasn't going to pull it and like clip it and put it out there because the entire thing was just so absurd. It just kind of normalized it, like hearing it for 7 hours straight. And I just didn't know, I don't know like exactly like what's normal and what's funny.
There's seriousness to the entire, it's unfortunately a medical science. Like, it's just gold.
Yeah. So credit to Michael Rappaport. Like, he's like going to single-handedly get me like 100,000 extra followers from all my accounts after this. I need to send him a nice fruit basket.
Dude, you need to, I would take a full like trash bag full of popcorn and post up and watch the entire 7 hours. I swear to God, if you put it out as like a 1 hour at a time series, like Netflix style, I would watch the entire fucking thing. That's how entertaining every bit of it has been.
It is that boring. It is that boring after a while. And maybe just because I lived it, but it's that bad. But spoiler alert, and I'm not even sure if we could put this out, but we have access to his tapes, Michael Rappaport's deposition tapes. And boy, oh boy, is it not pretty.
Damn.
It's something. He's stuttering, he's contradicting himself, he's interrupting, he's trying to talk over people, he's trying to bully the meeting. Yeah, it's and our lawyers tear him apart for how incompetent his lawyers are. Our lawyers absolutely castrated him and his lawyers left and right during his cross-examination. So hopefully that will see the day. Maybe it'll get leaked some way, somehow. I don't know. Who knows?
That would be very interesting. But I mean, you just represented us so beautifully, Smitty. If anyone hasn't watched that shit, they have to go to your account and watch it right now.
I'm just happy that he finally is being called out for the fraud that he is. Like, because that's all, he is a fraudulent asshole who, for some reason, and I'm not calling for his career or anything because I know like livelihoods could be at stake, but the fact that he isn't canceled, like, just from, I'm not going to say like doing anything illegal or anything, but from just being an asshole who isn't talented or funny, like, how does he keep getting work? I don't understand.
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I mean, he's not very like, he's not held in the highest regard right now. Like, if he's not canceled, like, I think that it's like he's had a rough go of it. Like, he's been through the ringer, and deservedly so.
I was very happy, my fellow Philadelphians, to see you attack him when he said, am I a Sixers fan now, when people were saying KD sucks. Yes. People were coming out. And speaking of which, the fans chanting KD sucks, people got such a fucking hemorrhoid over it. Like, they just didn't get it. Like, and there's nothing to get. It's just funny. KD is soft. The fans are chanting KD sucks, whether he's on the bench or not. That's Philadelphia. That is objectively just funny and harmless. And people have a problem with that? Dude, fuck yourselves.
I think I've been at Sixers games where we chanted, McGrady sucks back, and he wasn't even playing that night.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you just take their best player and yell, he sucks.
But hear Crosby me out,
sucks.
Though.
We're not even playing the Penguins, we yell, Crosby sucks.
Exactly.
Crosby sucks is universal because it's an interstate rivalry. Crosby sucks, you know, people probably have a tattooed bumper sticker and everything. But the thing about KD is, like, he obviously goes off of emotion. So it's like, why would you give that dude like bulletin board material? You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason for him to light a fire under him so he can, like, that's like sowing the seeds for us getting our comeuppance when he like splashes like 45 in a playoff game against us.
I hear you, but him on the bench just going like this, reacting, genuinely funny.
It's so funny.
It's just genuinely funny.
He's the man. He's the man. Like, he is fucking he is. Like, you say what you want. Like, he's fucking, just the fact that he reacted like that, the fact that he went back at Rappaport, that he's completely like embroiled in this entire situation. It's like, you'd love to have him in town. You'd love to have him on the
show. Oh, yeah. He is the most self-aware psychopath in sports right now.
Yeah, like, I think somebody else said it. Like, he's the only one that could literally go out and talk shit to every single person on Twitter that talks shit to him and then just go out and drop 40 on any given night.
Mm-hmm. I respect the hell out of it.
Yeah, he almost has, like, the Trump pass at this point where he can kind of say or do whatever he wants in that realm. And he's just like, it's KD. He's nuts. What are you going to do? He's crazy.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's not going to make headlines anymore if he has burners or anything like that.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Oh, like, he's just crazy, and he'll let you know he's crazy.
All right,
he'll tell you it's his burner. Yeah, hit them voicemails.
Get the voicemails cooking.
So I love this guy. I'm pretty sure this guy calls every single week, and he uses a different name every single time. You know his voice by now.
Love it.
But every time he comes, he's got great points every time he calls, and I absolutely fucking love it.
Yo, Smitty and Ryan, this is Ricky from Ridley, and, like, I got a question about why I'm supposed to be so scared of the Nets come playoff time. Like, if they're too much of chicken shit cowards to even play the Sixers at full strength during the regular season, like, how do we expect them to even have the ability to play them at full strength in the playoffs? Like, all they really did was allow Joel Embiid to see what DeAndre Jordan was going to throw at him, and we saw that it's clearly not going to be enough. Like, Joel Embiid's probably going to average 30 and 15 and drop at least 4 50-point games on them. But, like, I don't know, I'm not that worried about the Nets, man. Like, just... I don't want to get too excited, so that's why I called here and wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Thanks, fellas.
I agree with that, but I'm never going to admit it, solely because the second you do admit it, that's when the big three that they have just scores 150 points between the three of them. I mean, that's really the only way they can beat you.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky, for the call. Love the calls from Ricky. But when you looked at the injury report pre LaMarcus Aldridge's retirement, it was five guys who are like, it was Durant, Harden, LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, and Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, their injury report is a starting lineup that would terrorize the NBA. So they gave us a tough game without any of those dudes. Kyrie, I do think, is better on when he's on his own and he has to kind of be like the hero with a cast of misfit toys. But at the same time, like, they're scary as fuck because they're that good and that close to us without any of those extra players. So you start sprinkling in those extra all-stars. That's why I'm scared, Ricky.
But again, you are going to have to go through that big three and nothing else. You think Steve Nash is going to put up some play the last 2 minutes of a game that's really going to affect the outcome? Like, no, this is Harden, Durant, and Kyrie, and they're going to go as far as a healthy three takes them.
And at the same time, yes. I think our coaching staff is doing it. I think that there's a chance that Doc Rivers could call up that play. If you look at the end of the Lakers game when he had Alex Caruso guarding Tobias Harris, ISO'd one-on-one, like, that was a genius call, and they won the game based on that call. And there was some footage of Sam Cassell coaching Tobias Harris. I'm enthused about the depth of our coaching staff, and I think that we do have that advantage over the Nets.
Don't discount the Bucks either. I have a feeling the Bucks are going to beat the shit out of the Nets. I have a feeling.
Awesome.
And that will be awesome, but also a healthy, angry Bucks team with Drew and Giannis coming at us. That's also not that easy. Not that easy.
Middleton, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some scary things about that team for sure. People are really boiling it down. But at the same time, though, Nets fans, like, the rest of the league almost feels like they're counting the Sixers out. Like, we're focused on the Nets, but I think the rest of the league has almost anointed the Nets, and they're writing us off the same way we might be writing off the Bucks.
Here's a question. Do you guys want to face the Celtics 1v8 first round, or would you rather take maybe an easier Hawks team or the Hornets?
Give me the Celtics. Give me the Celtics.
Agreed.
Exercise the demons.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It might be a tougher series. It might go five or six just because they're going to play with a little bit more gusto and heart, but I want to beat the shit out of them. I want to go for the sweep. I want to cut them up and fucking beat them back to being terrible.
Give me poetic justice every time. Mm-hmm.
I want to spit out their bones like fucking Beowulf. Like, I want to fucking destroy them and fucking, like, make the entire town watch and listen as they try to downplay it and just, like, go around with some fucking Italian bread just sopping up their tears like it's olive oil and fucking eating them.
Say we do get to the championship, knock on wood. Who are you afraid of in the West?
Hey, with Murray going down for the Nuggets, that crushes them. That absolutely crushes them. I mean, he's like their heart and soul. I'm still afraid of how the Jazz can shoot. I think the Jazz can really run them up if they want. But I mean, Lakers, you gotta figure that a healthy AD and LeBron are going to be formidable no matter what. And I still believe in the Clippers. I still do. I mean, Kawhi.
No one's talking about them. Kawhi having an incredible – he might be hurt right now, but he's having an incredible year so far overall.
They silently beat the shit out of us earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm. And we got them up next game. But, I mean, the Clippers, granted, I am not a Tyronn Lue fan, but between Kawhi and Paul George, why did they trade Lou Williams? I still don't understand that. Do we have an answer? Or has there been an answer?
The Clippers?
Yeah, because if Lou Williams was on the market, why the fuck didn't we go after him?
I think that they, like, I don't know. I don't know if it was because, like, Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder or no, I'm thinking of the fucking Lakers. What the fuck am I talking about? Yeah, I don't know. But of those, of the teams remaining, it would feel really good to play and beat the Lakers, but it would feel incredible to play against and beat the Jazz. I would fucking love it.
Jazz scare me, though. Jazz can play. They can shoot. And they're going to be hangry coming in the finals as well.
I want it. I want all the smoke this year. I want to beat the fucking biggest and baddest teams. Like, I want the hardest road.
But also, the Lakers might not be the theoretically the hardest road, but just looking back and beating the piss out of LeBron.
Yeah, you get a lot of respect.
Feels pretty good.
It's like beating Brady. It's like beating the Patriots.
Exactly. Especially when LeBron, before he came to the Lakers, it came down to the Sixers and the Lakers, and he could have been a Sixer.
Yeah, he was never coming here. Come on. Smoke up.
No, it was his kids were going to go to Malvern.
Yeah, I think some moron on BarstoolSports.com like reported that. I actually did. We did have sources. They did actually check out schools in the area. That's a fact. Did that amount to anything? No, it didn't. It amounted to dick in my hand, but that's a fact. That and Kenny Britt getting dinner and AC telling everyone he signed with the Eagles.
Yes, classic.
Yeah, that was. I think that was the last time like 97.5 quoted us for actual sources.
Yo, first time, long time. This is Carmen from Scranton. I'm a first time caller. I'm actually calling about the Flyers. What the fuck happened to this team? We came into this season with expectations. We were saying we're going to be cup contenders. We're going to say Carter Hart was going to make a step forward this season after going full God mode in the playoffs last season. But what the fuck happened? This team plays like shit. There's no defense. There's no effort. It seems like Claude Giroux is the only player on the ice that actually gives a shit. And to be honest with you, I'm starting to doubt Alain Vigneault as a head coach because there's just no way you should be blown out by the fucking Buffalo Sabres or lose to cup contending to playoff contending teams in your own division by 4 or 5 fucking goals every night. So the question I want to know is, where the fuck do we go from here?
Well, if nobody else wants to take this one, I will. The Flyers, I mean, they're done. I think they're done. But it's going to be, in my opinion, in typical Flyer fashion, after they won in a beautiful shootout tonight, to go on a little bit of a run, get to within maybe a point of the playoff spot with the Bruins, maybe the Rangers. And then in typical Flyers fashion, they're going to miss the playoffs just like they have done in the past. But everything this guy has said is completely true. I mean, in the 2006-2007 season, the Flyers lost by at least 5 goals in an 82-game season. And that was like their worst season of all time. In 2021, the Flyers have done this 7 times in 42 games. Like, yes. How the fuck does that happen? And you're right. You know I've said on the show in the past that AV can only do so much. But I mean, at what point, you know, is this guy not give a fuck anymore? You know what I mean? I'm not going to go as far as say fire the guy because I really do think he's a great coach. But I think it's now time to get the players around him in the organization that actually give a fuck. Claude Giroux gives a fuck. It's hard to not say that Jacob Voracek doesn't give a fuck because he had a great goal tonight. He produces every single night. He's leading the team, and he's a point behind the leader in the team in points. It's just there's players on this team that clearly don't give a flying fuck. And I think there needs to be a culture change. And I don't know how that's going to happen, but
that's what I was about to say. Like, how much does it fall on the veteran leaders of the team to control the culture?
A whole lot. A whole lot.
Is it on like Hayes? Like there has to be got to be some kind of accountability towards the top of the roster.
Exactly.
Or you need to get rid of the coach. It has to be one of the two.
Yes. And we're not in the locker room. We don't know what happens behind the scenes, but I think that there are some players on this team that probably just don't give a fuck as much as other players. Now, granted, we had a guy come in tonight who made his NHL debut, Wade Allison. He made his NHL debut tonight. He had 4 goals, 5 assists in 8 games with the Phantoms, and he had an amazing game tonight. He's a bright spot. He was a second round pick for the Flyers, and he's a bright spot. And they're hoping to get him going. We have Cam York in the chamber who's going to start playing with the Phantoms. So hopefully he comes up. He's been an amazing player. So things could be looking up, but again, there needs to be a culture change, whether that is a coaching change. I don't think it needs to be, but maybe, you never know. Or just it's not, I don't want to call out Kevin Hayes because I don't know, but we, even if he is like a cancer, we can't get rid of him. We're paying him too much fucking money to get rid of him. So that's what I think needs to happen, is a culture change. And I don't know how the fuck they do that.
Well, that's the problem. They're definitely in a yike situation, and you cannot identify what exactly is the best move. They're kind of in a purgatory right now, and no matter what they do, it could be the right move, but most likely it's going to be the wrong move. Like, what do you do? Do you blow up the team? Do you keep the veterans and get rid of the head coach? Do you keep the head coach and like just try to make like one or two moves to spark plug everything? I mean, it sucks because you don't know exactly what to do. This was the number one team in the NHL last year, and now they're dog dick. Like, what exactly changed?
And I think a huge part of it that is really going underrated in my mind is losing Matt Niskanen. Clearly, this guy not only showed his skills on the ice, but he also showed some sort of leadership that the rest of the players got behind. And without that, you know, we're fucking lost. And it's almost a little bit of a dig to Claude Giroux, who's been really the leader in the locker room. But it's not like Claude Giroux's not going out every single night and giving all he has. I mean, the guy's in there every single fucking shift. He's still a leader. You know what I mean? It's at what point do the leaders or do the people behind the leaders not give a fuck about what the leaders are saying?
Yeah.
And that fucking sucks.
I think Keith Jones said it best the other night, and he really laid into the Flyers after they got blown out the other night. But I think he used the word mix, the mix of players, whether it's the veterans, the young guys, it's just off. Cause you identified it. I mean, they have good young players. They have talent, but they're not performing and they're not getting enough out of this team. So, you know, I'm not sure what they do moving forward. And I think that's why you see the brass, you know, balk. They're not going to fire AV because we have fired coaches recently. So that doesn't make – is instability worse? So it's a scary place to be. I don't think they quite know what direction to head because it's kind of on them. It's kind of on Chuck Fletcher.
Right.
You know, did he do enough in the offseason? Doesn't look like it. So the accountability is kind of on all of them.
One move I will say I do love is re-signing Scott Laughton to another 5 years. I fucking love Scotty Lotz. The guy just bleeds grit. I absolutely love the guy. I love when he has the mustache. And then another bright spot that, you know, let's not completely shit on the Flyers. After being put on waivers, being picked up by no one, and coming back, Shane Gostisbehere has been on an absolute tear. The guy's been phenomenal as of late. And, you know, all we can hope is that he just keeps it up.
Yeah, maybe it lit the fire under him.
Exactly. And maybe, like, more players need to do that. Sit fucking Jacob Voracek. Well, maybe not him because he's producing, but sit fucking Justin Braun. We got rid of Gustafson. He was a fucking liability. So, like,
I can't believe who took him for a seventh rounder. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think Montreal.
Yeah.
That's a question. If you want to sit some of the old guys, do you give another young Flyers upstart player that everyone kind of likes the captainship? Sit G down. Give it to Scotty.
Well, that's the thing, though, dude. Scott Laughton is not going to be the captain. If anybody's the captain after Claude Giroux, it's going to be Sean Couturier. The guy just fucking deserves it. And he produces night in, night out, just like Claude Giroux does. Claude Giroux still produces. That's the thing. He still comes out every night, gives you an assist every other game, gives you a goal every couple of games. Like, he still produces. He still makes plays. It's just there's other players around him that are not producing. Where the fuck has Nolan Patrick been? Now, granted, he got hurt tonight. He took an awkward shot right to the face, and he got hurt tonight. But all season long, he's been nowhere. Same with Nicholas Obey-Kubel. The depth of this team back in the third and fourth line has not produced as much as they should be.
My guy Nolan Patrick is cursed. Poor guy.
It's unfortunate.
Poor number two pick overall. Next voicemail.
Yo, guys, what's going on? This is Nick calling from North Jersey, originally from South Jersey, but nonetheless, I got this question for Booze in particular. Flyers suck. Obviously, they've been playing like shit now for a month and a half. I know you said the coach can only do so much on previous episodes, but at what point do you start blaming the coach? And do you think AV or Lane Vigneault should be fired after the season? Because I definitely think he should be obliterated into the sun. Smitty said it before. This happened with the Rangers. It just didn't happen as quickly. You know, I think he should get fired. Also, why on earth is Roman Quinn still at the major league level? This guy sucks. I'd rather have Zach Wheeler play center field full time. What do you guys think on the Phils? Thanks, guys.
Booze, you say your part before I go on my room and quit.
Yeah, I've said it before. Like, no, I don't think Lane Vigneault should be fired after this year. Now, another huge part, like, the thing that also boggles my mind, and this could actually be a problem, we don't know. The two other assistant coaches that the Flyers have were previously head coaches in the NHL. So, technically, we have three head coaches coaching this team. Now, is that a problem? Is there maybe a power struggle? Is there something like that? We don't know. I doubt it, but our power play fucking sucks. Our penalty kill is abysmal. And that's Mike Gio. Like, that's all him. That's on him. So, yes, the coaching has been fucking horrendous. But, no, I don't think Alain Vigneault needs to be fired after next season. Maybe new
Smitty, get Roman Quinn's ass. Light up Roman Quinn.
Let's go.
Roman Quinn. His five batting average.
Light him up.
Roman Quinn. Oh, do I have a manifesto for you to read, my friend? And it's one thing if you go out there and you stay healthy for the first time in your life and you use your speed to your advantage and you do the right things to play the game of baseball. Well, riddle me this, my friend. If you're so fast, if you're such a great fucking prospect, why the fuck are you batting 0.056 at the clip? 0.056? How is that even possible? A corpse could spasm his way in the batter's box to more than 0.056 batting average. It's embarrassing. My friend, it's embarrassing. Like, get up there and just make contact. Just put the bat out there like Willie Mays Hayes in Major League One, not two. Don't try to fucking outpower yourself. Willie Mays Hayes, Major League One. Just put some contact on there and speed it out. You will bat at least 100, my friend. At least 100, almost double your average. But instead of fucking doing that, you swing and miss, you look at pitches, and you're useless. You're absolutely useless to us in center field. I'm not saying kick him off the team because I still think he can be useful as a late game pinch running and defensive substitution. But Christ almighty, there is no reason why anybody batting .5056 should be in the majors. None. Now, Adam Heasley got delisted for personal reasons. Hope everything's okay with him. They're bringing up Mickey Moniak, the number one overall pick. They're finally bringing him up to show some potential. So hopefully,
why not Mick?
The center fielding position is at least improved on ball, but good fucking God golly of rational thinking of my ball sack. How can it not be improved upon if he's batting .056? Moniak comes up here and bats 200. He's a fucking Hall of Famer.
Dude, it's a tough time to even bring up Moniak because it's like you want to bring him up because like he's like fucking deserves it, not because the guy in front of him has like 20 at bats and only can get one fucking hit. Like the fact that he even has that many at bats, the Phillies brass has to just be like, well, it's not like our fucking number one overall pick could do any worse. We might as well get him some reps if we're just giving out reps. And the shame of it is the top of the Phillies lineup is actually good as fuck. Like it is actually like, and everyone's doing pretty well. Like the top of the lineup.
They are, but they aren't. Yeah. McCutcheon's having a little bit of a downtime.
They cool Reese, off.
Yeah, Reese has been good, but I mean, he's been the entire team besides Real Muto is one walking defensive liability. Like this team was not going to be a good defensive team entering into this season, but it's already kind of costing them games, and it's going to continue to do so. Noah has not pitched an true ace performance yet. Zach Wheeler, after his first start, has cooled off. Eflin, You know, he's either a Cy Young or he's a bum. They need a fourth and fifth starter. Bullpen has been the best part of the team some way, somehow. They are
now,
what?
But now they can only go. They can only go down because they pitched phenomenally. Yeah. So,
I mean, the Phillies kind of are sadly what a lot of people thought they were, and maybe they blew themselves out of the water the first series of the season, sweeping the Braves. But I mean, it's a blessing that they didn't have to face DeGrom today. Okay? It's an absolute blessing.
No, the Mets have been smacking us around. But I what do you guys think about Reese hitting second in the order? I kind of like it. Like, I know his average is like around a 260 right now, but I feel like the front of our order, like, I believe in it. I believe in Segura. Obviously, Harper is going to get his eventually. He's going to get on base. Didi is fucking – Didi's kind of hit for us.
Yeah, Didi's been phenomenal so far, I think, to be honest with you. He's been clutch. Just same with Segura. The middle of their lineup has been, I think, better, but it's been great. Segura's been great.
Other than one Braves game, their past six games, which I think amounted to five losses, one of which was one of the best major league umpire calls of all time, which granted us the win. The only reason we got a win, they're not scoring runs. They're not taking walks. They're striking out way too much, and they're not hitting home runs. I would hope the talent on this team proves that is kind of a downside, and they're going to come around. But right now, they're just not playing good baseball. And I want to say that this is a better than a 500 team, and I think they are. I think they're still going to win their 85, 86 games. But right now, they're 6-6, and then that's got to change. It's got to get better, boys and girls.
I just want Bryce, give us a stretch, dude. Like, just give us a stretch and, like, carry us for a couple games. Just, like, set the fucking league on fire like we know you can. We're paying you a lot of money, dude. Just give us a nice stretch.
Back-to-back games against the Braves, two dingers, one of which was the game winner. I mean, he has it in him. But,
yes,
Christ, everybody else needs to really, really step it up. And I don't know where or how. Maybe Moniak will give him a spark. Hopefully. I think he's definitely coming up early, but if he can be like that close.
Is he at this point? I don't know. Jesus.
I wanted him to get some AAA hitting. He's never hit AAA.
I mean, he was the number one pick how long ago? Like, how long do we need this guy to fucking develop before he's an MLB player?
But, Boos, he came out as the number one overall pick, soaking wet, 140 pounds. He looked like a goddamn Fast Times at Ridgemont High surface pothead
when he got 18 years old. Didn't play.
Yeah. I mean, the kid was a number one overall pick solely because there wasn't like a consensus number one overall pick that year. There wasn't a Strasburg. There wasn't a Bryce Harper. There wasn't a Pat Burrell in that lineup. Granted, Ian Anderson, Nick Sezel, Sensel, might be proving themselves better early, but I think he has the talent to be, a close to a 300 hitter, lockdown center field. And if he can do that early, like, that's going to help out this team a lot.
So then, all right. So if Mickey doesn't pan out,
we're fucked.
Are we going to see Kingery or Herrera?
I mean, Kingery's the next logical short-term option unless they make a trade, but I'm actually shocked that Herrera is still on the team. If they're just going to send him down to AAA,
why do we need this many center fielders?
Well, if anybody hits in AAA, you bring them up. But it would be nice if one of them hit in AAA and gave us the option.
Yeah,
I got a question for you fellas. I got a question. I think Philly Mays brought this up, but he said, I think he tweeted, like, when are we going to realize that Aaron Nola is not a number one starter? I think after three starts, it's tough to jump to any conclusions.
I'll give you that.
But he has only pitched 15.2 innings, 15 and two-thirds innings. So he's averaging just a smidge over five innings a game. You kind of want to see a little bit more of an innings eater if the guy's going to be your ace.
Yeah. And
I don't, he's not a not good pitcher, but maybe he is more of a number two pitcher's composition.
You could have said the same about Cole Hamels. You really could have before he really came into his own.
I think they even had that argument about Cole Hamels very early in his career.
Yeah, but at the same time, too, like Zach Wheeler's not going, you know what I mean? Like Zach Wheeler, after his first start, kind of cooled off as well. He's only going maybe, I think, did he go full seven last game? Yeah. Like,
No.
He might have went 6 2/3. Like
Zach Wheeler has the most prototypical ace stuff on the staff. It's just a question of whether he can A, be healthy, and B, be consistent. I think Nola will be the most consistent starter. He's proven that throughout his career, and thus right now he's deserving of being that ace. But between him and Wheeler, they need to lock this down, because Eflin, like, he's 50-50. He's either Cy Young or bust. And like Dombrowski's done a great job making this team into what it is. But man, those fourth and fifth starters, like Jake Ordozy was out there. You could have picked up a couple other people. Like you could have swiped in there for four or five, because Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, it ain't it, pal.
That one guy we picked up, is it Avery Bradley is his name?
Yeah.
Sean Bradley. I think
Archie Bradley.
Archie Bradley. He's a reliever, though. He's a reliever.
He's hurt. He's hurt for the next couple of weeks. So it's even, like, we can't even turn to him now.
But even Spencer Howard, like, maybe it's another case of they're really high on him and they might not want to put him in there too early, even though he got dinged around.
Yeah,
a little bit when he was called up. He got called up for the double header roster spot. You give him one extra roster and he pitched. I mean, he's probably not ready, but
listen, here's the other thing. The season is literally only 2 weeks old. Are we freaking out a little bit too early here?
We're
162 game season.
We're freaking out because we know this team is not going to play to its maximum ability, in which it needs to in order to make the playoffs. They're just not talented enough. You see that already. It sucks.
I'm not freaking out. I feel like I'm just making like casual observations about the nature of the team. Like, I'm just trying to be honest about the team. Like, I'm not freaking out, and I am trying to be positive about like what I like about the team, but like, we're not going to not talk about like what's going on in center field or the back of the rotation, mm-hmm. because it's like, they're glaring. Like, Chase Anderson's not even going to be a trivia question in like 5 years. You know what I mean? It's like, he's going to be a forgotten, like dust in the wind.
He's going to be like, remember that? Oh, I remember that fucking guy. That's exactly what he's going to be. He's not even going to.
You're not going to remember.
Not even. They need Moniak to come in and play well. They need Scott Kingery to be back up there as a utility guy, to spell people almost every night. They need another pitcher. They need the bullpen to stay sharp, and they need to stay healthy. That's the only way that they're going to have a chance at the playoffs.
Going to get better myself.
Sucks. Any more voicemails, Booze?
Nope, that's it.
All right, one final point about our beloved Philadelphia Eagles. Shea Capelda, Bo Wolf, and Zach Berman, all three very, very revered, intelligent, intellectual NFL insiders who people respect, wrote an article on The Athletic this week that basically reaffirmed everything that we believe, what we've seen about Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman and the dysfunction that has been going down in that organization since the Super Bowl. And the article, it's basically, you know, nothing surprising. We kind of already heard it all before. The biggest thing in my mind is the three people that wrote it: Shea Capaldi, Bo Wolf, and Zach Berman. This article doesn't get written 2 years ago solely because of the respect Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie got and the totalitarian control they had on the press. They would spin stuff like no other. They would piss on faces and call it rain showers. That ain't happening anymore. The media knows the truth, and they're coming at them. And that should scare Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman more than anything, because they have lost all control, not only of their organization, of their team, but everything else.
The narrative. They've lost control of the narrative around
exactly
what goes on behind those doors.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please.
The thing that scares me the most is after this after the, you know, obviously we had the hit piece on Howie, and then this comes out, and it, I didn't read it because it's not surprising. It's something that I already know.
Let's be honest. You didn't read it because you didn't pay for The Athletic.
Yeah, obviously. But it's not like I wanted to go out and pay for The Athletic, because it's not like I'm going to learn anything new about this organization.
That's exactly why I didn't pay
for it. But the scariest thing about it is, after hearing all of this, the jury is out on Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman. And you would think that a normal fucking human being running a very important organization that manages a lot of money and a lot of fucking emotions in a city would change. But my fucking fear is that they are so egotistical. They are so narcissistic. They are so batshit fucking crazy that nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same goddamn story, the same just dumpster fire, and nothing's going to change.
You know what I think? No, go ahead, Rick.
What? No, I'm just going to say that I pay for The Athletic and I didn't even read it. Like, I love all those writers individually and I still didn't read it because I'm fucking tired of it. Honestly, I'm tired. Like, I feel like I already read that article like more than once this offseason. I feel like every press, every media member is getting like a crack at their chance and their like 1200 words on saying this organization is dysfunctional. No shit, it's dysfunctional. I know it's dysfunctional, but I feel like they're like had no big offseason signings to write about, or like I feel like the media feels like they're getting like cheated out of a fun offseason. First of all, we got a brand new quarterback. We traded a first round pick. Tons of shit is going on. But second of all, like, I just don't need to hear it over and over again that these dudes don't get along and that they're fucking running around with their heads up their ass. Like, we know that they won a Super Bowl. We know that last year was an abomination, but I don't really feel like it's reporting to just rehash like the emotions that everybody already knows exist.
There was one thing that was hammered down in this article that really should be kept being hammered. And that is the fact that Jeffrey Lurie is involved a lot more than we thought, especially at the drafting and scouting level.
He's got the tag of meddler.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's actually going in and overriding scouts and people he's paying to make these decisions for him. And, like, I got to be honest with you, like, if I owned an NFL team, like, I'd probably be doing the fucking same thing. Like, it's your own like literal Madden franchise. We've all played Madden.
But I get that. But, and I try to put myself in those same shoes. If I buy a team for $1 billion and I need to keep up that and even make this team worth even more, win them a Super Bowl, why wouldn't I hire the best people to do that for me? Because obviously I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I wasn't in the NFL. I'm not a scout. Hey, I should just hire people to do it for me. I'm a billionaire.
Boos, if money did not matter to you, which it does not to Jeffrey Lurie, he was born into it and he just probably doesn't know the value of the dollar. This is fun money to him. If you had a Madden franchise that you bought the game and you are playing it, are you going to default to some computer AI to make the decisions for you and to play for you?
This isn't a video game. But
it kind of is. I would trust fucking bored. Scouts. He ran through his first wife. He's got a second one now. He's in a little bit of action. He's in the draft room. He's making decisions. He's saying if Jerry Jones can fucking do it and get away with it, why can't I? Let the balls jingle a little bit.
And he's got an ego, too. Like, he's a billionaire. He's a fucking billionaire. He doesn't have the ego of a rational fan, or, like, he's not thinking about things. He's like, I made $1 billion, and let me fix this franchise, too. Like, I'm going to do what I want with my thing. Like, I completely understand, like, the rationale of why he would want to meddle or something. If you own a restaurant, like, you want to make sure that, like, the food tastes good. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to care about the ingredients that are fucking going into your fucking sandwiches. And if you feel like they're trash ingredients, or if you have, like, an opinion on what type of bread you should be using on the sandwiches, like, you're not just going to be like, well, the head chef is, like, the only one that, like, buys things. Like, there's going to be friction.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Booze. It's about who you trust. And Lurie trusts. You know, you got to put that trust into football people or you got to put that trust into somebody else. And who he trusts right now is Howie Roseman. And Howie Roseman, I thought it was very revealing that article said that they're both Lurie and Roseman are very driven by analytics, almost obsessively. And that's going to irk some football guys. And that's always been a friction in every sport. And
clearly it hasn't fucking worked. So like,
well, but to their point, what do you mean? They won a Super Bowl doing this. So they're only going to be even more.
Did they really win that Super Bowl with the stuff that's coming up? Well, I mean, they also wanted to fire Frank Reich before Doug Peterson told them not to. Like, the more that comes out, the more and more I respect Doug Peterson, which is amazing. I still cannot fathom how that man won a Super Bowl. But the fact that Doug Peterson didn't tell them to just go fuck themselves privately and now publicly makes me even respect him even more.
Yep.
What a fucking mess.
Fucking Eagles.
Fucking mess. All right.
Watch them go like,
I know, 10 and 6.
Watch them quietly go a solid 10 and 7 this year.
10 and 7.
Wow. Are you adding that extra game that they already approved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that threw me for a loop. I don't know what the fuck you were talking about for a second there.
If they go 10-7, there's going to be nothing quiet about it. We're going to be like, let's fucking go. Let's win this fucking Super Bowl.
Jalen Hurts ran for like 800 yards.
Oh, that's the other thing. How the fuck are we still talking about Deshaun Watson still coming to the Eagles? How is that still a thing?
Because it is still a thing. Because Howie's still interested. Some way, somehow, there's been many rumors that Howie ain't going to be sitting at 12. Something's going to happen. Either they might be moving up or Deshaun might be coming in town. And that's something we're just going to have to look forward to. 2 weeks from now, NFL draft.
Quarterback.
Something might happen.
Yes, sir. It's coming.
Might happen. All right, boys.
What are you boys doing for the draft? When is that? Next weekend or 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Roan, I think we got a nice little special developing, correct? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Another draft special presented by fucking somebody. A mortgage company or somebody.
Yeah. We'll get that straight.
Yep.
All right, boys. Thank you very much. As always, we're unsanctioned. We're trying to get sanctioned in that podcast world. If you want us to do more Philly content, leave a 5-star review. Get those comments out there. Start tagging people. Get the social media voices up. We're going to be ready for the playoffs. Sixers. Hopefully some live broadcasts. We appreciate you. We'll hang up and listen.